Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. In May of 1933, a British World War I veteran named Maurice Wilson left London, setting out to become the first man to climb to the summit of Mount Everest. To be more precise, Maurice Wilson, a man with no climbing experience and very little flight experience, planned to land a plane on the mountain's lower slopes and then climb to the summit, all while remaining undetected by authorities who were trying to stop him. It's a story that involves elaborate disguises, romance, and a lot of pluck. In his new book, The Moth and the Mountain, A True Story of Love, War, and Everest, Ed Caesar tells the story of Wilson, from how the war had changed him to why he believed he could succeed where more experienced climbers had failed. In its review, The Guardian wrote, "Wilson's story is bonkers, but also beautiful. The profile Caesar builds is compelling, colorful, and warm of a complex, contradictory man with admirable self-belief and a healthy disregard for class boundaries and national borders." Ed Caesar is a staff writer for The New Yorker. Welcome, Ed.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
When did you come across this story of Maurice Wilson?
I read a couple of paragraphs about him in a huge and brilliant book about Everest, and I was just intrigued by this tiny bit of the story that I read. I read about this guy that flew a plane, trying to crash it on the lower slopes of Everest and get to the top on his own. And I thought, wow, that just sounds interesting. And it became nearly an obsession of mine. I used to sometimes wake up in the night thinking about Maurice Wilson. I ended up going all around the world trying to dig up archives and meet people who might know someone who knew something about Wilson. It became, you know, the projects of about 10 years. And it's thrilling to have his story out in the world.
Wilson was famous for a while around the time of his expedition, and at least one book has been written about him. What didn't these books capture? What didn't these accounts capture about him?
What I felt was missing, really, from the whole conversation about Wilson was a connection between what he had gone through on the Western Front in the First World War, the absolute carnage that he experienced and witnessed, and his heroism in battle, and his later adventure. And there is, if you look at his diaries, if you look at the letters, if you look at what was going on with the rest of his contemporaries who had fought in that conflict, there is a clear connection between his actions in Flanders in 1918 and what he eventually did, getting into that plane and going to try and climb Everest.
Yeah, you write in the book, you explain how he was involved in a particular battle in April of 1918, with more than 400 in his battalion were killed, another 122 were taken prisoner. He had very bad physical injuries, and he got to the point where he really couldn't even stand with any pressure on his torso. But you write in the book, the doctors did not know what to make of Second Lieutenant Maurice Wilson. He left the military hospital in Manchester with his gunshot wounds healing, as far as the surgeons could see, and movement returning to his left arm. They assumed he would soon be well enough to return to the front lines, but Wilson told them he was still in agony. What was going on?
Well, a number of things might have been going on, but what we do know is that Wilson was terrified about going back to the conflict, which is understandable. And he'd also witnessed his brother, Victor, who had got what we would now understand as PTSD and what was called at the time neurasthenia. He was shaking. He had nightmares. He was totally debilitated by what he had seen in the front line. And Wilson wasn't a diagnosed neurasthenic, but he did undergo severe depression and mental health issues, you know, later in his 20s and early 30s. He described it as the world feeling topsy-turvy to him, and he sought help for his malaise from doctors all around the world to no effect.
What did being in the war and being a soldier, what impact did that have on his attitude towards authority?
Yeah, this was a fascinating one because, you know, in Britain, we have this, still have a class system. It's not quite as rigid as it was in Wilson's time, but Wilson was you know, Wilson was a hero. There's no doubt about it. He was given the Military Cross for Valor. And he was also a victim. He was injured in the war. And after the war, he, like other people who were injured, wanted a recompense for what he had suffered. And the authorities didn't consider him injured enough to give him one of those army pensions. And that rankled with him, that injustice rankled with him. And so he carried with him after the war a feeling of distrust of his superiors in governments and, you know, the civil service in Britain. And when he cooked up his plan to fly to Everest, the civil servants in London are constantly trying to turn him back. They think it's going to be a diplomatic embarrassment. They think he's going to, you know, sour Britain's name around the world. And he loves that because he feels like he's thumbing his nose at authority.
My guest is Ed Caesar, author of The Moth and the Mountain, a true story of love, war, and Everest. We talked about war. What's the love story here?
He was in love with his best friend's wife, to complicate things. So he was in a possibly chaste and possibly not chaste sort of ménage à trois based in suburban London before his flight. The fact was that Wilson had burned through relationships ever since he'd come back from France from the First World War. Yeah, he'd been married twice. Both marriages had failed. There were a string of other women he had left on ships for various parts of the globe with different women. Nothing had stuck. Nothing had worked out. He could not hold down a relationship. But he did fall in with this childless couple in London, the Enid and Len Evans. And his letters to Enid from his journey to Everest are astonishing. I rescued them out of a basement in Germany, and they're full of the most florid and beautiful language. And he is clearly very much in love with her, and she is clearly his soulmate in this adventure. The curious thing is, he sends these letters back to Enid in the same packet that he sends his letters to Len. So there was no secrecy about the relationship, and it seems to have brought joy in different ways to all three of them.
What do you mean you found them in a basement in Germany?
There was another writer who had bought them from another writer. So there was a German historian who had them, and I wrote to him, not knowing that he had them, but I knew that he'd written about Wilson before in German, just asking if he had anything of interest that might be useful to me. And he said in a kind of offhand way, well, I have these letters that are just sitting in my basement. And so I got on a plane and went to see him in Bremen in northern Germany. And he showed me the letters, and they were absolutely wonderful. And he wouldn't take any payment. The only thing he would accept was me buying him lunch. And so I flew back to England with this box of letters on my lap. And they were the most wonderful things to read.
My guest is Ed Caesar, author of The Moth and the Mountain, A True Story of Love, War, and Everest. Let's talk about the moth. It's a kind of airplane. He did not know how to fly this airplane. What was his plan, and why did he think he could do this? Why did he think
his plan was to fly this plane in stages all the way to the Himalayas. So at the time, most expeditions to Everest would have taken a ship to India, to Calcutta, then they would have taken trains to Darjeeling, then they would have walked to the mountain. The whole journey would have taken more than 3 months. Wilson estimated that he could fly more than 5,000 miles to the foot of the mountain in a little more than a fortnight. So you would have to go in stages, because the moth will only get you so far in one stage without refueling. And so he just bought himself a secondhand plane, this beautiful de Havilland Gypsy Moth with two open cockpits, 100 horsepower engine, made out of canvas and bits of wood and metal. I mean, I've flown in one. It feels like you're flying with a lawnmower engine in the front. It's really, really does feel extremely fragile. But he bought one, he took lessons, and not long after starting taking lessons, he was on his way. He flew all the way to northern India.
Part of this story also is that he had no mountain climbing experience. At one point, we realized he didn't understand how or why a climber would use supplemental oxygen. He didn't have crampons. Why did he believe he could physically get to the top of this mountain?
He thought that if you were physically courageous enough, that there was no obstacle that could stop you. He was wrong about that. But he thought that physical fitness and determination and faith in your own mission would get you all the way. And in fact, he did get an awfully long way for someone with no mountaineering experience. I mean, it is astonishing how successful he was. And I won't ruin the story for your listeners, but he really did get a long way just using faith in his own mission, determination, and physical fitness. But when it came to technical parts of climbing, he didn't know anything, and he was really at a loss to know where to start. So that was really where the difficulties started in earnest for him.
And I don't want to give too much away, but there's a part of the story that involves him being in a disguise. And I'm going to describe the disguise, as you write in the book. The disguise was dazzling, a Chinese brocaded waistcoat in gold with gold buttons at the side, which Wilson thought made him look like a circus trainer, dark blue cotton slacks, a bright red silk girdle. You're right, it was a ludicrous outfit. Wilson loved it, you write.
Yes.
Did he enjoy thumbing his nose at the British authorities who were interested in his movements?
Oh, he loved it. He was so mischievous. And one of the things that really made me fall in love with Wilson was his absolute contempt for authority. He loved to get away with things. He loved to sneak across national boundaries he wasn't allowed to go across. He loved this elaborate disguise and this, you know, crazy plan that he'd cooked up. There was a kind of childish glee in doing all of these things. He was most fully alive when in the middle of some crazy plan. And this outfit was possibly the moment at which he's happiest in his entire story, when he puts on this outfit.
My guest is Ed Caesar, author of The Moth and the Mountain, A True Story of Love, War, and Everest. Let's talk about the Everest part. Most of what we know about his time on Everest comes from journals and letters that he wrote to Enid. And given how little experience he had, it's amazing how far he gets.
Yes.
What was his state of mind? He did have setbacks, though. What was his state of mind, do we get from the letters, when he would reach a setback, given that he had this belief that if you believed it, it could be true?
There was most of the time he's absolutely convinced that he is going to make it. But there are little moments where he shows his fear. He is he's a brave person, but facing the highest mountain on earth and brutal sub-zero temperatures and a fearsome wall of rock and ice. He admits in his diary, "I couldn't sleep because of my aching nerves." And in one of the last letters that we have from Everest, he says, "Some of us go looking for it and some of us wait for it to call us up." And he could be talking about the mountain, could be talking about death. He could be talking about any number of profound things at that moment. But you can sense his state of mind changing from absolute confidence to quite proper fear at what was in front of him. And I find those parts almost unbearable to read.
At times, his story seems comical in some ways. Other times, it's quite tragic, quixotic. How do you see him today?
I see him as a complicated, wounded, funny, tortured human being, and who did something extraordinary, but was acting out of impulses that we all feel. He was expressing some deep traumas and needs through this journey to Everest that we all feel. We all want to redeem the broken bits of our life. And Maurice Wilson did that in a more theatrical way than many people would choose to. But he was acting out of the same impulses that we all feel. His was a search for meaning, for plot, and for escape. And my goodness, this year I have felt that need for escape, as I'm sure everyone has. But that to me is he wanted to outrun his problems. He wanted to outrun his situation. And I think we could all feel that impulse.
The name of the book is The Moth and the Mountain, A True Story of Love, War, and Everest. It is by Ed Caesar. Ed, thank you for being with us.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.